this.
Well, welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. Thank you for coming in the rain. We've got two cases that are going to be argued this morning. It's my understanding that everyone is here and ready. The first one that will be argued is Hyde versus Northwest Regional, followed by BBB versus Cardone or Cardone. Thank you. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce the panel. To my left is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and to my right is Justice Bill Meyer, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth.
Good morning.
Before we begin the first argument, I'll ask our clerk to call the case.
The court will now call Charles Glenn Hyde, and now for the Northwest Regional Airport property. You may please support Ms. Andrea Baressa to argue for the appellant, Mr. Jeffrey Stringer to argue for the appellant.
You may proceed.
Before you start, I want to make a notice disclosure. I flew in and out of this airport many times years ago whenever I had an airplane, and I always found the runway to be adequate for my purposes.
Thank you, Justice. May it please the court, Chief Justice Sutter, Justice Kerr, Justice Meyer, my name is Andrea Baressa, and together with my colleague Shelby Douglas at Sheep and Stone, we represent the appellants in this matter. The appellants are Glenn Hyde and various business interests of Glenn Hyde, and that includes Hydeway, Inc. Hydeway, Inc. is the owner of the airport. That's not a fact that's in dispute. The property records confirming that ownership are in the summary judgment record. But for purposes of oral argument, I'm going to refer to them collectively as Hyde, unless I'm specifically talking about one particular of the appellants, in which case I'll identify that appellant. This case is coming to you on appeal from cross motions for summary judgment. The trial court in this case was presented with a motion for summary judgment by the Northwest Regional Airport Property Owners Association, who I'll call the POA because I don't think we want to hear that 30 times. The POA had filed a suit against Hyde, alleging that the deed restrictions for all of the properties surrounding the airport were now amended to all be the same one set, and that same one set of deed restrictions, called the Integrated Deed Restrictions, or the IDRs, as they're referred to in our briefing, those govern now all of the properties at the airport and give all of the right to maintain and improve the runway to the POA and allow the POA to assess fees for that purpose. Now, in response to that claim, Hyde argued that the POA did not actually follow the amendment procedures for all of the properties at the airport, that in fact there were at least six different sets of deed restrictions in the record that pertain to properties at the airport. And they all have unique language that requires amendment to be accomplished via certain procedures. Not only that, it's undisputed that there were properties at the airport that never had deed restrictions. They were unencumbered. So what the POA's position in this case was that they could go out to the airport and take basically one big popular vote, and based on that popular vote, they could completely do away with six different sets of deed restrictions or more, and at the same time impose new restrictions on properties that didn't have any. Now, the final judgment that was rendered on that was erroneous, but it actually went even further. The final judgment in this case didn't just say that the IDRs were validly amended. What the final judgment said was not only is the POA now the person with the interest in the real property that can go and maintain the property, but they can actually take over the operation and control of the airport, the actual functioning operation of the business of the airport, not the land, but the business of the airport. That's not something that the plaintiff pleaded for, but that's something that the trial court granted to them. So we're in a position now where since the final judgment's been entered, the POA, I've gotten reports that the POA is attempting to open up its own office. And if the court finds that to be material, I would ask the court for leave to be able to supplement the record to introduce that evidence as to how the final judgment's being used, not just with respect to the real property rights, which is what the IDRs pertain to, but also to the rights to actually, for Highway Inc., to run its own business. You cannot take away control over a business by amending property records. And the way the final judgment reads, the only right that Highway Inc. has retained with respect to the real property that it owns is the right to pay the property taxes on it. And that's untenable. Now, the final judgment also puts the appellants in a really awkward position. Because as shown in the summary judgment record, Highway Inc. had license agreements with certain property owners. Michael Hodge is an example that's evidenced in the summary judgment record. He didn't want an easement to the airport. He didn't want any liability for anything that happened on that runway. But he wanted access. So rather than getting a real property interest in the runway, he contracted with Highway Inc. for a license. And pursuant to that license, Highway Inc. is contractually obligated to maintain the airport for his use and for his access in exchange for a fee. That contract still exists. Mr. Hodge is not a party to this case. The final judgment permanently enjoins Highway Inc. from interfering with the POA's maintenance of the airport. If this final judgment stands, Highway Inc. will be in the position of having an inconsistent result, being liable to two different parties with no possibility of complying. He will either have to violate the contract and not interfere and maintain the airport as Highway Inc. is contractually obligated to do, or risk being found in violation of a permanent injunction. This again is untenable. Now to remedy this issue was presented to the trial court. We asked for an abatement, and we argued to the trial court that the POA needed to join all these property owners because the final judgment was going to impact these contracts between Highway Inc. and all these other property owners and put Highway Inc. in the position of having liability due to inconsistent results that could be reached in different cases, not binding on all of the parties. The trial court rejected that not once but twice, finding that the POA was the one that would bear the risk of the inconsistent results. The record does not bear that out. The record clearly reflects that it's Highway Inc. that will be prejudiced by the inconsistent results. And under the Uniform Declaratory Judgments Act, it was the POA's obligation as the plaintiff in the case to join all of the necessary parties. And because the contract rights of these licensees, these non-parties, were implicated, the POA should have been compelled to join those property owners so that the issue could be decided for all without the risk of Highway Inc. being faced with having to choose between violating a contract and violating a permanent injunction. So let's talk about that.
Counsel, so is it your position and your client's position that the daily operation of the airport remains in the hands of Highway Inc.?
Justice, my answer to that question is yes, but that the final judgment doesn't say that, because the final judgment added words that were not in the POA's pleading. The POA sought certain injunctive relief and certain declaratory relief. We had the cross motions for summary judgment, and then after those cross motions for summary judgment were ruled on, the trial court added the words operation and control to the relief at the request of the POA. Those rights were not part of the claims for relief that were in the POA's pleading. And so to the extent that the final judgment does say that operation and control over the airport rests with the POA, they didn't plead for that, and you can't prove that by amending property records. You cannot take away someone's ongoing concern by amending property records. So those two words definitely should not have been in the final judgment. But the permanent injunction is also erroneous because it constitutes an unconstitutional prior restraint. And let me tell you that the permanent injunction in this case is so broad that I am violating it by standing in front of you today. The permanent injunction says that the high defendants are not allowed to suggest that the integrated deed restrictions were not validly amended. And that is exactly what I am standing here arguing to this court today. Now, we made this argument to the trial court. We explained this language is overbroad. It inhibits the appellants in this appeal, from voicing disagreement with the POA, the trial court, with no constitutional basis whatsoever. They have every constitutional right to voice their disagreement with whether or not the POA complied with the requirements for amending the deed restrictions. So you might think, well, there must have been some really compelling evidence for the trial court to have granted this extremely broad and punitive relief. a prospective gag order with no end. But they did not introduce, the POA did not introduce any evidence that any statement that was made by any appellant, first of all, they didn't link any appellant to any statement. That's not in the record. They just attribute generally some statements to all of the appellants. But they don't explain how that caused them any harm. They don't explain how it cost them any money. They certainly don't explain how it created imminent or irreparable harm. And those are the standards under Texas law for a permanent injunction. So that also is an error that requires reversal. But frankly, all of these issues can be resolved by answering one question. Did the POA comply with the requirements for amending the deed restrictions at the Northwest Regional Airport? And the answer to that is a resounding no. This court has held that the party that's proffering the restrictions must prove that they complied with all of the requirements to make those amended restrictions binding. Under Dygard Land Partnership versus Hoover, this court held that the words in the deed restriction cannot be, quote, enlarged, extended, stretched, or changed, end quote. You have to interpret them by their plain and ordinary meaning. So what are the plain and ordinary meanings of the words in the deed restrictions that are at issue in this case? Well, of the half dozen or so different sets of deed restrictions, the one commonality is that they all require amendment by an instrument. N, the word N, A-N, is a singular modifier. It refers to a single instrument. There has to be a point in time, a day on which those new restrictions became effective. Otherwise, you have a giant cloud. You don't know which restrictions govern a property on any particular day. So in order to clear up that gray area, you have to file an instrument to give an effective date for the new deed restrictions. Under French versus Diamond Hill, we know that that's the case because the court in that case upheld the amendment of deed restrictions based on the following evidence. The signatures of the people who were agreeing to the new deed restrictions were collected between December 24th and December 31st, so roughly a one-week period. All of the signatures stated that they would become effective on January 1st. Every signature being relied upon in that case had the same effective date and was collected within a reasonably short time period for filing in a single instrument. Moreover, there was no evidence that there were any interim conveyances or retractions, meaning somebody didn't sign it on the 24th and then change their mind on the 27th before they became effective. So on that record, this court said, yes, you did it. You followed the restrictions. You followed the procedures for amending the restrictions. The PLA in this case did not do that. This is a haphazard year-long campaign by which the POA sought to disregard the terms of the existing deed restrictions, and let's just get everybody under one common scheme by one big popular vote. That does not comply with the requirements in the restrictions. In fact, the POA in this case is relying on five separate instruments filed on four different dates over a period of 11 months. None of those instruments are sufficient to comply with the deed restrictions amendment procedures. I'd like to point out a few of the examples. The hide restrictions, for instance, have a 99-year initial term. This is an enforceable legal requirement in the restriction. It cannot be amended for the first 99 years. In Simpson versus Afton Oaks, the Texarkana Court of Appeals noted that you cannot disregard a time frame provided for in deed restrictions merely because it's inconvenient or unpopular. If there is an initial term, you have to abide it. You cannot amend outside the time periods provided for amendment simply because you disagree or you get enough people to voice disagreement. It was the right of the landowner, the developer, to impose those restrictions, and the passage of time doesn't shift his right to impose those to the popular will. In addition, if you look at the signatures that the POA is relying on, one of the arguments that they've made to this case is that they could go back and correct some signatures. And by correct, I mean have them signed by different parties. We all know that there's a legal distinction between someone who signs a deed restriction in their individual capacity and someone who signs it in a representative capacity for someone else. That's a legal distinction that the law makes. And we pointed out in response to their summary judgment motion that they did not get signatures from the record owners. They failed to account for properties that were co-owned by multiple people, properties that were owned by partnerships or trusts. They didn't account for all of that. And they've argued that, well, they could go get correction deeds, But the Texas Supreme Court has said a correction deed corrects a scrivener's error in the property description. For example, a misstated boundary line. It does not allow a party to go back and change the individual signing the deed restriction or change the capacity in which that signature was obtained. So the correction deed argument is a fallacy. Finally, I would note that the standards for cross motions for summary judgment are well settled. The idea that this was submitted for a trial adjudication on the merits and that the court was in a position to make factual determinations just flies in the face of 50 years of summary judgment jurisprudence. These cases, the record is clear, this case was decided at summary judgment. So if there is a fact issue, it must be reversed. The mediation agreement that they rely on saying that the trial court was allowed to make the fact issues, that was a jury waiver. That does not mean that the PLA was absolved of its obligation to conclusively prove its case with no fact issues at the summary judgment stage. The mediation agreement cannot be read any other way. So based on that, we would urge the court to reverse the case. And if the court agrees that the other affected property owner should have been joined, we would ask that the court remand for that abatement and joinder of those parties. But more importantly, we think that the summary judgment conclusively established that the PLA never followed the amendment procedures for the IDRs, and that as a matter of law, in no case with no parties could they be found to have followed those amendment procedures. So the court could also render judgment in favor of the appellants and remand the case for a determination of award of attorney's fees if the trial court finds that to be equitable and just under the Declaratory Judgments Act. If there are no further questions, I'll give the remainder of my time until the rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm here with Aubrey Dameron today representing Northwest Regional Airport's POA. Suffice it to say, Mr. and Ms. Justices, we disagree with nearly everything Mr. Hyde says, both factually and legally, about not only what's happened in this case, but also the law to be applied. Hopefully, we did an adequate job briefing those issues for the court. I'd urge the court to look at those because I don't know that I'll have time to address every issue counsel raised in argument today, but I'm going to attempt to do that. This POA has existed since 1985. It is a very large group of sophisticated, very successful people, and if anybody knows anything about real property law, they know how unusual it is to be able to get a majority of landowners to agree to change their restrictions, especially when you're dealing with 235 landowners. In this case, you have 135 out of 235 landowners who were so distressed about what was going on at that airport that they agreed to amend those deed restrictions. At the time they signed the IDRs agreeing to amend the deed restrictions, the airport flooded during heavy rains. It had no working visual approach slope indicator, no working wind indicator, and the runway was so dangerous that the FAA noted that in a notice to airmen that it published about the condition of the airport's facilities. Today, a short time after the POA has assumed some new responsibilities out there, the drainage problem's been fixed. There's a new $1 million runway in place. There's a working VASI and wind indicator, and 89% of the property owners out there are paying their POA assessments. Things are working well for the first time in 30 plus years. And for that reason, I'm honored to explain why the court should affirm the judgment of the trial court in this case. And let me address first this issue of whether the POA followed the procedures with respect to each of the areas in the airport. It is certainly true that there were a number of different restrictions at this airport. In the northeast section, which is the area that Hyde developed, there were one set of restrictions for all of those lots. So if the court gets beyond this 99-year initial term, and I'll talk about that later, there's no question that the deed restrictions were amended in that area. In the northeast area, there were various versions of the restrictions, but they all basically had the same wording. The differences were in how the properties were used out there. One group of the properties was a residential neighborhood. One group of properties was a non-residential, non-commercial area. Essentially, it had small hangars for people to store airplanes. And then there was an area adjacent to the runway that that is commercial. So there are businesses there. There are businesses that work on airplanes, repair airplanes, and do various other things. And then there was a deed restriction, and we'll call it restriction number 6, which Mr. Hyde talks about a lot in his brief, and that was a buffer zone. Now, Hyde says we haven't taken into consideration that the POA didn't make any effort to make sure it addressed the differences with respect to each of those deed restrictions, and nothing could be further from the case. The summary judgment evidence contains a vote tally that shows every single property of the at the airport, the property owners that owned properties as of December 1st, 2016, when those owners acquired the properties, so that the court could determine that they actually owned the properties at the time the IDRs were filed, and what deed restrictions applied to the property. And we've tallied the votes every way you can tally them, and for each set of restrictions out there, except for restriction number 6, which the POA never attempted to amend, a majority of the property owners signed the restrictions. Now, the technical problems that they point to don't, there is not any case law that supports the proposition that those should constitute a reversal of the judgment. And let me talk about why. Their first complaint is these weren't filed in a single instrument. All of the deed restrictions out there have this language. These covenants and restrictions are to run with the land and shall be binding upon all parties and all persons claiming under them for a period of, in some cases 30 years, in Hyde's area in the Northeast, 99 years, from the date hereof, after which time said covenants shall be automatically extended for successive periods of 10 years, unless an instrument signed by a majority of the then record owners of the lots has been recorded, agreeing to change the covenants in whole or in part. It is just not factually correct to say that the IDRs that the POA relies on 5 different instruments to show that the IDRs were amended. The language does say an instrument. The IDRs were actually recorded on May 12, 2016. They were recorded that date because that was the date after which a majority of the signatures had come in Mr. Hyde's area. So there is a majority attached to the IDRs on May 12, 2016 when they were originally filed that contains a majority of landowners in the Hyde area. The record conclusively shows that no other instrument agreeing to change the covenants has ever been recorded. And that is what these deed restrictions require. The deed restrictions say an instrument signed by a majority of then record owners of the lots has been recorded agreeing to change the covenants in whole or in part. The other things that were filed were signatures. As signatures came in other areas, the POA filed those signatures. And it filed those signatures in a document that said this. On May 12, 2016, integrated deed restrictions, quote, IDRs, were recorded in the real property records of Denton County, Texas as instrument number, and it refers to the instrument number of the 2016 IDRs for properties more particularly described therein. Since the recording date of the IDRs, additional property owners, as defined in the IDRs, have executed the IDRs to evidence their support. The undersigned is recording the IDRs along with additional signature pages obtained since the original recording. The signature pages to the IDRs previously recorded are not being recorded due to the large number of pages. And what is attached are the signature pages. It is factually incorrect to say that there were 5 different IDRs filed that the POA relies upon to have amended all of the restrictions in all of the areas of the airport. There's not. There's a single instrument. Hyde also complains that the recording date for the POA cannot prove that a majority had signed for each set of restrictions sought to be amended. Oh, and importantly, let me just address that. Once again, this is just factually incorrect. To amend the restrictions required an instrument signed by a majority of the then property owners of the lots. So as of May 12, 2016, the owners had to own the lots on that day. There is nothing in the restrictions that require their signatures to occur on that day. The most restrictive reading of this only requires that the signatories own the lots the day the amended deed restrictions were filed. The evidence clearly shows that a majority of the property owners who signed in each area owned their lots the day the IDRs were filed. Now, I will say that there were a couple of instances where people conveyed lots between the day the IDRs were filed and the last day the amended signatures were filed. But those did not affect the majority, and the summary judgment evidence shows that. So clearly, it's just factually incorrect to say that the POA did not strictly comply with the wording of the original restrictions when the IDRs were filed to amend them.
Counsel, what do you say to the argument of your opposing counsel that the trial court gave more relief than was requested or that could be granted by giving the property owners the power to operate the airport?
Well, factually, what's happening out there, Madam Justice, is that Mr. Hyde runs a fixed base operation at the airport. He sells fuel and other things. But the airport itself, since the change, it's the POA that's been interacting with authorities and basically governing the airport.
By what authority? By what authority?
Well, if you look at our pleadings, because that's what they're complaining about. They're saying we didn't sufficiently plead to get all the relief that the trial court granted. If you look at our pleadings, what we say at the volume 1 of the clerk's record, page 62, is that the POA has assumed the responsibilities of the former ACC. And if you'll recall the record, when this airport was originally developed, there was an architectural control committee set up by the original developer. Her plan was to convey easements to all of the property owners out there. And the language of those easements, if you look at the reservation language, it expressly gave the easement owners the right to govern the airport. And the right existed by virtue of setting up this architectural control committee, which would be the committee that acted on behalf of the landowners out there. The POA, by making this pleading, was essentially referring to those documents, which were attached to the pleading, by the way, and saying that the POA had assumed the responsibility of governing the airport. It's not that complicated. You really can't read the pleadings any other way. But as if that wasn't enough, the live pleadings also request judgment of the court declaring that the IDRs remove any authority Hyde may have had to, quote, govern the airport and authorize plaintiff to govern the airport. I don't know how it could be any clearer than that. The pleadings expressly convey what it is the POA was seeking. And, of course, Texas law doesn't require that the pleadings contain every single element of what a party's requesting. Texas law only requires that pleadings give fair notice to the opposing party of the theories that are relied upon and the relief that's requested.
And okay, so if you pled it sufficiently, what authority do you cite to for having the power under the law for the POA to assume operation of the airport?
Well, the amendment of the IDRs is what allows that, Your Honor. If you look at the original development of the airport and how that occurred, a lady named Edna White, who was a historical aviation figure, one of the first female pilots, developed that airport. And it's a private airport. And like many airports around, in fact, this court in Smith versus Houston, there's an airport in Sanger, Texas, in the north part of Denton County that has a grass field. It's the same kind of airport this is. It's open to the public. In other words, pilots can come in and land there. It's not just the property owners that can land there. In that case, this court held that the property owners had the right to govern that airport. Now, the original development scheme was a little bit different. In that case, the original documents required the property owner to execute a lease with the owner of the runway and pay the owner of the runway a lease fee in addition to having their easements and the right to use it. In this case, Edna White did not put that imposition on the property owners. She conveyed to the property owners, every property owner that purchased in her area out there who had an easement, basically the right to use the runway, taxiway, and other common areas at the airport, and the right to govern the airport through the Architectural Control Committee. What Mr. Hyde did when he developed his area was he changed the scheme. Instead of using the original developer's idea about how to do that, he set up a runway taxiway license agreement because he thought his ownership of the runway gave him the right to govern. I would argue that it did not, because the runway was already burdened by those pre-existing easements. And for those reasons, Your Honor, I ask that the court affirm the judgment of the trial court.
Thank you.
Justice Sutter, Justice Kerr, Justice Meyer. It might sound irrelevant, but there's a fast food restaurant around the corner from my house. And I stop there frequently because it's convenient, but I will tell you that the service is slow and my order is almost always a little bit wrong. I don't like that. It's inconvenient. It bothers me from time to time. What I can't do about it is get together all my neighbors in my deed-restricted area and get together all the neighbors in another deed-restricted area and get together all the neighbors in another deed-restricted area and get them all to have one big, great, big vote that I get to be in charge of the fast food restaurant. That's not how the law works. You cannot take over someone's ability to govern their own ongoing concern by amending property records. That's not something that the law permits. So to the extent that the final judgment allows the POA to take away Hideaway Inc.'s ability to own and operate the airport that it owns, for which it is legally responsible to the FAA, is in error and must be reversed. I will agree with the distinguished Mr. Springer on one thing. We basically do not see eye to eye on the facts of this case at all. I think that's probably pretty apparent. What I see when I look at the summary judgment record is I see multiple sets of deed restrictions in different areas that provide for different amendment procedures. And I see a POA that thought that that was too cumbersome. The property owners, I believe the language was used, they were just so stressed. There was just so much going on. The procedures were just going to be so cumbersome. So what they're asking the court to do is decide to set aside Texas property law on how deed restrictions are supposed to be amended in favor of this path that's a little unconventional, and no, it didn't quite meet the letter of the restrictions, but it's convenient, and hey, most of the people are happy about it. Well, the owner of the property that's being negatively affected isn't happy about it, and neither are the owners of properties that didn't want easements, they didn't want the POA, and now they're in a position where can they enforce the licensing agreements against Hideaway Inc. when he's enjoined from fulfilling his obligations under them pursuant to the integrated deed restrictions? The conflict is irreconcilable.
Ms. Peressa?
Yes.
have the people that you contend should have been added to the lawsuit, have those been identified in the summary judgment record?
The summary judgment record identifies some of them. I'm not sure that I could conclusively state that it identifies all of them, because the issue was that there was a dispute over what's the date and time. And I apologize, I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to answer another one at the same time. The council talked about the ownership on December 1st, 2016. There is evidence in the record of ownership of properties on that one particular date. If that's the date on which the deed restrictions were amended, then that would be the date on which property, the ownership would matter, not just for purposes of the filing of the restrictions, but for purposes of the signature. But what we have is we have integrated deed restrictions filed on May 12, 2016. Which properties did those encumber? We have deed restrictions, the integrated deed restrictions were filed again on July 19th, 2016. Which properties did those encumber? And we have them filed again on December 1st, 2016. Which properties did those encumber? If the POA's argument is, well, we're only hinging on the December 1st one, then we've got two fraudulent property records here that have been filed, because these two weren't effective, if that's what the POA is saying. So we have a question about, well, who are the affected property owners? It depends, in answer to your question, Justice Meyer, it depends on the date that we're talking about. It's impossible to give the court a list of everybody that needs to be joined. Now,
well, do you agree with counsel's statement that there's 235 property owners, lot owners in this area that are covered by all these different sets of deed restrictions?
I agree in part. I'm not sure that I agree with the exact number. It is around, and I apologize that I don't have the Mr. Hyde's affidavit directly in front of me.
Well, he said 235. That's what I'm asking.
Yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor, and in answer to your question, but there are additional properties that had no restrictions at all prior to the POA filing these IDRs, and that's undisputed.
So there are people out there who have easements or title to a lot that are not included in the 235.
If I understand your question, there are property owners, let me answer it this way. Out of the property owners at the airport, according to Mr. Hyde's summary judgment evidence, about 60% of them had easements, about 40% or so had license agreements. And that number fluctuates over time because property changes hands and different property owners want different things. I see that my time has expired. With that, we would urge the court to reverse and render judgment in favor of the appellants on this matter. But at the very least, we believe we've raised a fact issue that requires reversal and joinder of new parties and a trial on the merits to resolve the fact issues at the very least. Thank you.
Thank you. Counselors, your case has been submitted. We thank you for your argument. We have another case that we're going to hear next. You're welcome to stay if you'd like, but you're also free to go about your business. Thank you.